Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, people-powered radio, recording at our Hideaway studio here in East County. Bernie Sanders and Bill Clinton were in San Diego this past weekend as the battle for the June 7th Democratic primary heats up. We'll have some highlights today from their local visits and what they had to say. Plus, we'll have information about an upcoming visit by the presumptive Republican nominee, Donald Trump. We've also got some troubling news today on what state and national fire officials have to say about the upcoming fire season, and it's not a pretty picture despite those El Nino rains. The Padres made a major error Saturday night, no, not during the game, but before it, when a gay men's chorus suffered humiliation on the field. We'll give you the play-by-play and the reactions from fans as well as LGBT community leaders on today's show. If you drive a Subaru, pull over and listen up. A recall is in effect for a defect that's so dangerous, Subaru is warning motorists not to drive their vehicles at all, not even to the repair shop. Subaru will have your car towed if you've got one of the models on the recall list. On our Capitol Report today, we'll have news about a bill introduced by Congressman Duncan Hunter from San Diego to outlaw child rape and other human rights violations on military bases worldwide. Plus, we'll have an update on Sergeant Charles Martland, a Green Beret who was facing possible discharge from the military for forcibly removing an alleged child rapist off a U.S. base in Afghanistan. The Defense Department has announced plans to protect military personnel from the Zika virus, and we'll have details on today's show. We'll also have news about a congressional vote to allow VA doctors to prescribe medical marijuana for veterans for the first time. From Public News Service, learn how the new CARE Act is helping patients and their caregivers. The mural of famed aviator Charles Lindbergh that was removed from Lindbergh Field recently will soon have a new home here in East County, and we'll tell you where on the show today. Learn how one small town is making a big splash with a series of murals reflecting its heritage and history. Our newsmaker interview today is with Jay Gordon from Green Garden Gold. He's a manufacturer of hemp-based CBD, or cannabidiol. Hear why demand is growing for hemp products, including hemp oils for medicinal uses, and how changing laws could impact the burgeoning hemp industry. Today we'll also air one of our Best of East County episodes on Vines and Wines, an interview with the proprietor of the Principe Winery in Ramona, which produces a rare, rose-flavored wine once prized in Europe, made by a descendant of Italian royalty. Now, if you'd like to make some extra money by doing your civic duty, the Registrar of Voters is looking for poll workers on Election Day, especially bilingual poll workers. Stay tuned for details on how to apply. We also have a health alert today on a recall involving sunflower seed products and some salads due to possible listeria contamination. These were sold in major retailers. So stay tuned for all of these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The Democratic presidential candidates' campaigns both held rallies and other events in the San Diego region over the weekend in anticipation of California's June 7th primary. Senator Bernie Sanders drew about 10,000 people at a rally at Kimball Park in National City on Saturday, the Union Tribune estimates, and on Sunday, he held a second rally at a high school in Vista. Earlier, he toured Friendship Park at the international border, a meeting place for separated families between San Diego and Tijuana. Speaking in National City, Sanders spoke of creating an economy that works for all of us, not just wealthy campaign contributors. He reiterated his goals of free college education, raising the minimum wage, and launching a massive federal jobs program to put people back to work at decent wages. He also called for criminal justice reforms and immigration reform. In addition, he took direct aim at Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee. Sanders told the crowd, "I think virtually every Democrat understands that Donald Trump would be a disaster for this country if he becomes president." He added, "We cannot have a president who insults every other day Mexicans, Latinos, who insults Muslims, who insults women, who insults African Americans, who, in a sense, is doing everything he can do to divide us up." After hearing stories of families who can only see their loved ones on weekends while visiting Friendship Park, Sanders said, all of this tells us why we need comprehensive immigration reform. I would hope the Republicans in Congress understand that we have a very, very broken immigration system and that it must be reformed, and they should in fact work with Democrats to pass comprehensive immigration reform, the senator said. If not, and if I am elected President of the United States, Sanders concluded, I will use the executive powers that the President has to do the best that I can. Sanders has previously called on the Obama administration to reassess its immigration enforcement initiative and extend temporary protected status to families who have fled violence in Central America. And he's introduced legislation to eliminate quotas for the number of immigrants held in detention and ban private prisons, also co-sponsoring legislation to guarantee due process for border refugees. His opponent, Hillary Clinton, has also said that she supports comprehensive immigration reform. By contrast, Trump has said he wants to deport undocumented immigrants and build a wall along the entire U.S.-Mexico border. Trump will be coming to San Diego on May 27th for a rally at the convention center at 2 p.m. Sanders was joined at the border by Christian Ramirez, director for the Southern Border Communities Coalition, and Maria Puga, widow of Anastasio Hernandez Roja, who died of a heart attack after Border Patrol agents repeatedly beat him and shot him with a taser. Former President Bill Clinton drew a far smaller crowd of several hundred people in Bonita Vista High School's gymnasium in Chula Vista this weekend, Times of San Diego reports. Clinton urged those present to support his wife, Hillary Clinton, and to have confidence in the future of this country. The former president said, there's only one person with a record of getting things done as First Lady, as a senator, as Secretary of State with Republicans in Congress. And, he added, only one person who has a remote chance to both keep us safe in a dangerous world and make good things happen and give us the space we need to grow and lead the world out of this mess we're in and all of these crazy conflicts that are interfering with you living your future. Bill Clinton later headlined a fundraiser for his wife's campaign in Rancho Santa Fe, where donors paid between $1,000 and $2,700 a plate. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Federal and state fire officials are warning that serious wildfires could be in store for Californians later this year. The U.S. Forestry Service Chief Tom Tidwell said Tuesday that Sierra snowpacks are melting faster than we've ever seen. Despite El Nino rains, he predicts, we anticipate a very active fire season in California. 4 years of drought and bark beetles have left forests full of dead and dying trees across our state that can't be saved. They burn hot and fast, and many are near homes, Cal Fire has indicated. In a briefing this week in Washington, D.C., Tom Vilsack, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, the department that oversees the U.S. Forest Service, stated, you've got 40 million dead trees. You're looking at a very serious situation. The USDA pledged Tuesday to send extra manpower as well as $30 million to clear dead trees near roads and campgrounds in preparation for a potentially catastrophic wildfire season in California. Secretary Vilsack also called on Congress to assure that his agency has the resources to protect lives and keep forests healthy. The USDA indicates that nationwide, the 216 fire season has begun with five times more acres already burned than this time last year. And last year had a record-setting fire season. Climate change has resulted in fire seasons that are 78 days longer than in 1980. And the number of acres burned annually has doubled since 1980, federal officials have indicated. The National Interagency Fire Center also forecasts high fire potential for Southern California, among other areas, this summer. Cal Fire has also added seasonal firefighters earlier in the year than normal in anticipation of an extreme fire season. California suffered record fires last year, including the 76,000-acre Valley Fire in Lake, Napa, and Sonoma counties, the third most destructive blaze in the state's history. That fire killed four people and destroyed over 1,300 homes. San Diego County still holds the record for the worst fire in California's history with the 2003 Cedar Fire. Our region has suffered through many other severe fires, including the devastating 2007 firestorms. In an extreme fire season across the West and here in California, resources can become stretched thin despite increased staffing. So it's particularly important for property owners to be prepared by clearing brush to create defensible space and taking other precautions to help protect your home. You can learn more about how to protect your residence at getreadyforwildfire.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
When 100 volunteer members of the San Diego Gay Men's Chorus took to the baseball field Saturday night to sing the national anthem at the San Diego Padres versus Dodgers game, their microphones were inexplicably turned off. A recording of a woman singing the Star Spangled Banner was played over the loudspeakers instead. No announcement or explanation was offered. Afterwards, the stunned performers were ushered off the field and heckled by baseball fans shouting homophobic taunts, including, "You sing like a girl," according to a post on the group's Facebook page by Bob Lemon, director of the chorus. The San Diego Union-Tribune posted video of the incident, along with a terse apology issued by the Padres on Twitter, which states that during the pregame ceremony, quote, "a mistake was made in the Petco Park control room that prevented the San Diego Gay Men's Chorus from performing the national anthem as scheduled. We apologize to anyone in the ballpark who this may have offended and have reached out to the chorus to express our deep regret for the error," the Padres' message said. Yahoo News reports that the chorus has performed at Padre games in the past. They've also performed at the Academy Awards. The incident has sparked outrage in San Diego's LGBT community and nationwide. One post on the San Diego Gay Men's Chorus Facebook page states, "What should have been a night of joy and celebration at Petco Park instead turned into a nightmare, raising serious questions about homophobia within the San Diego Padres organization and its relationship with the LGBT community." 3 days earlier, according to the chorus director's post, Padres representatives aggressively sought to prevent singers from performing the national anthem unless they purchased a ticket to the game, even if they did not plan to stay for the game, which was not part of any previous discussion or written or verbal agreement and would have cost the small community-based nonprofit chorus thousands of dollars, they say. The demand was eventually rescinded Friday following repeated complaints made by gay organizations to the San Diego Padres management. The San Diego Men's Chorus is not satisfied with the Padres' apology. The group is calling on the Padres and Major League Baseball to launch investigations to determine if the action was an intentional act of anti-gay discrimination or possibly even a hate crime done for the purpose of ridiculing the gay men. The chorus is also asking the city attorney's office and Human Relations Commission to probe the incident. The post on the chorus Facebook page attracted hundreds of comments, all voicing support for the group and outrage at the Padres' actions. Gay choral groups from as far away as Chicago expressed solidarity with the San Diego singers. Some posters suggested additional actions, including complaints to the U.S. Justice Department or a lawsuit against the Padres. One observed, "Homophobia is getting worse in this country, as is racism." Another observed that professional sports is just not ready to embrace the gay culture. Some posted choice adjectives for the Padres' actions, calling them disgusting, hateful, and shocking. And several said they would no longer be buying Padres tickets or rooting for the team. The San Diego Gay Men's Chorus says it does welcome Padres President Mike D's apology and his offer to meet with LGBT leaders to discuss the incident. Director Lehman says, "We believe it is important to work together with the San Diego Padres organization to build bridges within the LGBT community, rather than burn them down as happened last night." But the group makes clear in its post that members remain disappointed by the Padres' brief public statement, which they feel does not appropriately address the gravity of the situation nor pay due to the 100 volunteers who took to the field in celebration and were let off in humiliation. In short, when it comes to the botched handling of both the sound system and the aftermath of the debacle, the Padres so far have struck out. Jane Kerner offered this conclusion in her response to the San Diego Gay Men's Chorus Facebook page post. She wrote, "The Padres and their fans who heckled you are the real losers. They let fear rob them of the opportunity to hear your beautiful voices pay homage to our country. You are the winners, showing grace through adversity." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barena with an important safety notice for owners of certain Subaru vehicles. Subaru is recalling over 48,000 new Legacy and Outback vehicles due to a steering column defect so dangerous the company doesn't want you to drive at all, not even to a mechanic. Subaru warns, the steering column on these vehicles may not have been manufactured to specification. If this condition exists, turning the steering wheel may have no effect on the direction of the wheels, increasing the risk of a crash. The message also carries this compelling warning. Your vehicle is not safe to drive if this potential defect is present. Please do not drive your car until it has been inspected and, if necessary, the recall repair has been performed. The recall includes 2016 and 2017 Subaru Legacies and Outbacks that were manufactured between February 29th and May 6th.
This is East County Magazine's Capital Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. San Diego Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter has introduced legislation to outlaw child rape and other human rights violations on U.S. military bases worldwide. Known as the Martland Act, the measure is named after Green Beret Army Sergeant First Class Charles Martland. Hunter, a former Marine combat veteran, father, and member of the House Armed Services Committee, intervened to halt the Army from booting Sergeant Martland out of the military after Martland used force to remove an Afghan police commander who reportedly admitted raping a 14-year-old boy on a U.S. military base in Afghanistan. U.S. soldiers had been ordered to turn a blind eye to the rape of children in Afghanistan under the guise of respecting cultural practices. In April, the Army confirmed that Martland will remain in the military. The practice of child rape in Afghanistan is pervasive, however, according to multiple reports. Hunter's bill states that one U.S. soldier stationed in Afghanistan said, "At night, we could hear the boys screaming, but were not allowed to do anything about it." The New York Times also reported that U.S. soldiers were told to ignore abuse of boys by Afghan allies, a practice known as bakhabazi, which means boy play. One soldier reported finding several men lying on a floor in a room on a U.S. base with children between them under a sheet. The policy to ignore such abuse occurred because Afghan militias and other Afghan allies were needed by the U.S. to combat the Taliban. Allegations of abuse were deemed matters of domestic Afghan criminal law. But those laws too often protect abusers, as in the case of a man who raped a young teen girl, and she was later forced to marry her rapist. The policy of ignoring abuse also breeds resentment among residents in villages where children are abducted and victimized, as with the T-boys or servants forced into sexual slavery in Afghanistan. Sergeant Martland was rated second among 400 Special Forces instructors and was considered an asset to the American military. But when he was approached in 2011 by an Afghan woman visibly bruised who told him her son had been raped by the U.S.-supported local police commander, Martland and another Green Beret confronted the man, who reportedly admitted to raping the boy repeatedly but laughed it off. Martland, who had previously dealt with another rape incident near his outpost and with an honor killing, forcibly removed the commander and told him never to return. For his actions, the Army relieved Martland of his duties and later tried to expel him from the military until Hunter intervened. Martland has said he is thankful for being able to continue to serve and voiced appreciation to Congressman Hunter. Martland, whose wife is expecting twin boys, has also announced plans to name one of them Duncan Hunter in honor of the congressman. The Martland incident has prompted the Defense Department Inspector General to review U.S. policies on the prevalence of rape in Afghanistan. Hunter's measure aims to make it U.S. policy that child rape or human rights violations will not be tolerated on any American bases or outposts throughout the world. The bill has not yet been heard, but Hunter says he's receiving support from his colleagues. The American Center for Law and Justice also joined efforts to keep Martland in the military. Jay Sekulow, chief counsel for the center, said of the Army's decision, "Justice has been served," adding that the U.S. military has a moral obligation to stop child sexual abuse. He called the corrective action a victory not only for Martland, but for the American people as well. Regarding the need for his bill, Hunter criticized the Department of Defense for not having a policy to forbid pedophilia and child rape on U.S. installations. "If his bill becomes law," he states in his newsletter, "you're not allowed to rape children on U.S. installations. It's that simple." Not everyone sees it that way. Retired Navy Commander Chris Harmer, now an analyst with the Institute for Understanding War's Middle East Security Project, has said that most nations have some social practices that the average American would find objectionable, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. He cited female genital mutilation in Africa and forced marriages of young girls in some countries as examples. Harmer says, "All of these are problematic, and there's no way for the U.S. military to address any of that." But Hunter's bill, if enacted, would change those situations too, giving the Secretary of Defense 90 days to implement a policy halting all sexual abuse of children and other human rights violations on every U.S. military installation at home and overseas. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
The U.S. Department of Defense is taking action to protect military families from the Zika virus, which can cause microcephaly and brain damage in babies if a mother contracts Zika while she is pregnant. Department of Defense labs are enhancing techniques to test mosquitoes for Zika. The Southern Command, or SOUTHCOM, is offering voluntary relocation out of the affected areas to all pregnant Defense Department employees and beneficiaries. In addition, the Army website reports all Army medical facilities have been notified of the concerns surrounding Zika infections and are prepared to assist patients who may have been infected. The Armed Forces Pest Management Board recommends wearing clothing and uniforms treated with permethrin, as well as using approved insect repellent and removing standing water that may serve as mosquito breeding sites to prevent bites. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The U.S. House of Representatives has voted in favor of a measure that would allow Veterans Administration doctors to recommend medical marijuana for their patients in states where medical marijuana is legal, currently 24 states, including California. The measure, an amendment to the Department of Veterans Affairs Appropriations Bill proposed by Representative Earl Blumenauer, an Oregon Democrat, passed by a 44-vote margin, including 57 Republicans voting in favor. Aaron Smith with the National Cannabis Industry Association called the action a policy that is long overdue, adding, "Medical marijuana has huge potential benefits for many of the issues that military veterans deal with, and it's unconscionable to muzzle their doctors from talking about it. We hope this vote for common sense and compassion is the first step this year towards a smarter, saner approach to cannabis policy from Congress." Nearly 150 cannabis professionals from across the country held nearly over 200 meetings with members of Congress and their staffs to lobby for the cannabis policy reform. Cannabis has been touted to treat a variety of ailments plaguing veterans, from pain due to combat injuries to PTSD. However, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs officially states that despite anecdotal stories of cannabis helping post-traumatic stress syndrome symptoms, controlled studies have not been conducted to evaluate the safety or effectiveness of medical marijuana for PTSD. Thus, the VA site states, there's no evidence at this time that marijuana is an effective treatment for PTSD. The VA also cautions that substance abuse issues involving marijuana use have increased in vets with PTSD. A CBS News national poll from last month shows that 56% of Americans support full legalization of marijuana, with an eye-popping 90% supporting legalization for medical use. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Nearly 5 months after it went into effect, health advocates say the CARE Act is making a big difference in the amount of education patients and their caregivers receive. The Hospitals and Family Caregiver Act requires hospitals to designate a caregiver for each patient when he or she is admitted, and then give that caregiver detailed instructions upon discharge. The idea is to improve patient outcomes and reduce readmissions. Heidi Kelly from Camarillo supports the law because her mother passed away last year from internal bleeding after being discharged from the hospital on blood thinners without sufficient instructions for the family.
They didn't ask for one person to give all the information to, and I'm the oldest of six, and they were talking to all of us at different times, getting different information.
The numbers on unplanned hospital readmissions for the first part of 2016 aren't in yet, but state statistics show that for the first half of 2015, more than 124,000 people, or 13.14%, had to return to the hospital within 30 days. That's a slight improvement over 2014. Sarani Hare Kwan with the California Association for Nurse Practitioners says the new law forces hospitals to give the patient and the caregivers the tools they need to ensure a healthy recovery.
Instead of just being kind of pushed aside as the patient's being cared for or getting ready for a discharge, the caregiver can now say, hey, wait a minute, you have an obligation to include me in this process in order for this patient to be cared for correctly.
A survey from the AARP found that 4.4 million Californians give unpaid care for a family member or loved one. Almost half perform complex medical tasks and almost 80% manage medications. On their website, the AARP has a downloadable printed card about the CARE Act that you can put in your wallet as a reminder of your rights at the hospital. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The Ramona Hart Mural Project has already brought 7 beautiful murals commemorating Ramona's history to this town, nestled in the mountains of San Diego's East County. Soon, 2 more murals of epic significance will be on display, thanks to a recent vote by Ramona's Design Review Board approving the projects. The mural of famed aviator Charles Lindbergh, formerly on a building at Lindbergh Field in San Diego, has been donated by the artists, John and Jeannie Whalen, to the Ramona Hart Mural Project. The artist spent 8 months restoring the landmark mural after San Diego's airport removed it for replacement by a newer, modern mural. The restored mural's new home will be on the outside of the Masonic Lodge in Ramona, chosen because Lindbergh was a Mason, and the lodge's building is large enough to fit most of the mural, though it will still need to be trimmed down at the bottom. Lindbergh was the first aviator to complete a transatlantic flight back in 1927 aboard the Spirit of St. Louis airplane, which was designed and built in San Diego. The Whalens chose Ramona for the Lindbergh mural's new home because the artistic couple had previously painted the first Hart mural, which depicts rodeo star Casey Tibbs. The second new mural, approved by Ramona's Design Review Board, is titled The Old Swimming Hole, created by artist Tom Guerra in the style of Norman Rockwell. It will depict a boy and his dog jumping into a natural pool at the base of Cedar Creek Falls. Appropriately, this 28 by 17 foot mural will grace the exterior wall of Leslie Pool Supplies on Main Street, the Ramona Sentinel reports. The image captures the nostalgia of a bygone era, since leaping into the pool at Cedar Creek Falls is now banned, following several fatal accidents that occurred at the still popular swimming destination. Guerra, a lakeside resident and El Cajon native, has done many other prominent murals in East County, including a large mural on the Olaf Weghorst Museum, recreating one of the Western artist's works. His historic murals can be seen along Main Street in El Cajon. Plus, you can find more of this artist's creations along the San Diego Riverwalk and Walker Preserve in Lakeside. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part 2 of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio here in East County. Today we're going to be talking about hemp, and specifically cannabidiol, or CBD. Now, CBD is most commonly known as a derivative of marijuana that's been touted for various medicinal benefits, but CBD can also be derived from hemp, and it's legal to purchase CBD products from hemp in all 50 states. And that's a key protection for users, since medical marijuana remains illegal under federal law, even in many states that have legalized it. CBD does not make you high, unlike THC, the other component in marijuana. And there are some conditions that apparently respond to one, to CBD and not THC, and vice versa. So what we are seeing is that CBD and hemp products in general are popping up absolutely everywhere these days, on store shelves, from Whole Foods to health food stores to you name it. My very special guest today is Jay Gordon. Jay is with Green Garden Gold, and he is a distributor of CBD products that are made from hemp. Jay, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Miriam. I appreciate being here.
We also have sitting in on the interview today, Leon Thompson, on our staff, who has been doing a lot of research and writing on the growing hemp industry. Leon, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So, Jay, let's start by having you tell us where you source your hemp from for these products.
Most of our hemp comes from Northern Europe. That would include the Scandinavian countries, Germany. As a matter of fact, I believe there's going to be some grows in Croatia. We also get some from Colorado and Kentucky. And we anticipate that there'll be other states getting in line to produce hemp for CBD as well as other products.
What is the status currently on the law for growing hemp in the United States and also in California?
It's changing rapidly, but historically, in recent years, which would be, let's say, the last 50 years, there's only one state that grows a great deal of it. That would be Kentucky. Colorado now grows it, but you need permits issued by the Department of Agriculture, and you have to go through a process where you get qualified to do it. It's grown in Colorado, in Washington, and you do need a permit from the Department of Agriculture.
So basically, it has to be legalized both by the state, and even then, you have to get a permit from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which is not necessarily that easy to get. I understand there's some
hurdles
correct. To go through.
That's correct.
Okay.
Right now, in the United States, if you want to grow hemp for study purposes, for experimental purposes, or if you're a nonprofit, or if you're a research lab or a university, those are the qualifications for being able to grow hemp that are the first and foremost.
So even though hemp products are legal to sell, I understand they're legal to manufacture, it's not necessarily legal to grow the hemp, which seems crazy, so you have to import it from someplace else or go through these processes to get the permits.
That's correct. It sounds a little bizarre. In fact, it is a little bizarre, but that's been the policy for about the last half century.
Yeah, and they're checking to make sure that the plants are that they're low in THC, which is the active ingredient in marijuana and so forth.
Correct.
Actually, it's easier to grow marijuana in California than it is to grow hemp.
Yeah, that's so bizarre. Jay, tell us how difficult or easy it is to grow hemp, apart from the legality of it. Is this a crop that is easy for farmers to grow?
Let me just put it this way. It's a weed, and weeds tend to grow whether you want them or not. And hemp is not only a fast-growing weed, but it replicates itself several times a year. So there are areas where you get more than 4 and 5 crops a year, particularly warm weather climates. So that would be wonderful in California.
Yeah, it would. One of the issues, of course, with importing hemp crops, apart from the fact that it's not supporting local agriculture, is it's hard to know what's on them. They might come in with chemicals, chemical pesticides, chemical fertilizers. Is it difficult to grow these organically?
Much of it is grown organically. We test all the CBD oil that comes in from the hemp that's used in the grow. We have it all lab tested, so we know if there are impurities and what level of impurities there are. And the growers that are in this business know that the stuff has to be pure. Otherwise, the final product isn't going to be pure, and it's not going to be purchased.
Okay. For you as a distributor, how difficult is it to find good strains of hemp or CBD?
That's probably the secret sauce of the business. There's no central location or, so to speak, fish market where you can go and buy and bid on the CBD. You have to find the farmers that grow the best hemp and then create the most effective CBD. So it's not like you're going to be able to go around the corner, see a farmer and he's growing hemp and know that that's going to be a source of great CBD.
What parts of the hemp plant do you source CBD from, and are some more effective than others?
The biggest concentration would be in the flower that is on the top of the plant, but there are many, many good components in the entire plant. So the best CBD is made from the entire plant.
What about the extraction methods? Are there differences there?
Very much so. There are companies that use petroleum-based products, which are not desirable. There are companies that use other chemicals that leach the oil out. The most effective, the cleanest, and the most popular way right now is super-cooled carbon dioxide or super-chilled carbon dioxide. And that's in a specialized machine that's very costly and somewhat labor-intensive to operate.
Leon, you've studied this extensively. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of hemp in the United States, how important it was in the early days?
Well, hemp was widely grown in Kentucky, in the South, and all through the United States. And when cotton came along to compete as a fiber, of course, they had free labor, and cotton became cheaper than hemp for making clothes. But it has a long history of making paper. The Calistoga wagons were covered with hemp material. The sails of our sailing ships back then, as well as the ropes and riggings, were all made out of hemp. Some of the finest clothing in the world was made in China out of hemp. And since then, even in World War II, the United States government encouraged farmers to grow hemp for the war effort.
Yeah, in fact, during the colonial days, the British government actually required the colonists at Jamestown and some of the other early colonists to grow hemp because it was considered such a valuable fiber. George Washington grew hemp at Mount Vernon, for example. It was very popular with the founding fathers. And then it wasn't until 1937, when marijuana was outlawed under the war on drugs, that hemp fell from popularity. Now it's enjoying a resurgence once again. Jay, I'd like to talk a little bit about the status of the research. Because marijuana continues to be listed as a Schedule I drug at the federal level, there's been some real constraints on the kind of research that can be done in the United States. There's been some animal studies and some studies in petri dishes that show promise, and certainly a lot of anecdotal evidence. There's been a lot of promise in CBD to treat things like seizures in children, you know, the Charlotte's Web CBD strain for marijuana, for example, Lou Gehrig's disease, very promising, treatment for chronic pain, arthritis. I think there's about 50 different conditions that where it's claimed to have various effects, positive effects. But what is the latest on some of the research that you're seeing? I think you mentioned something about the National Institute of Health starting to fund some studies.
Yes. A lot of the best science right now comes from Israel. Oddly enough, some of the best hemp in the world is grown, as well as marijuana, by the way, in the Galilee. I'm not going to add any color to that comment, but there's a The most prominent researcher is a gentleman by the name of Meshulam. His last name is Meshulam, first name Raphael. And he's funded by the NIH to study the effects of CBD on about 51 conditions.
Wow.
And he's appeared on television. He's been interviewed. And the entire industry has expanded geometrically in the last 5 years as far as discovering new uses for CBD.
So once we start to see that peer-reviewed medical research, double-blind, placebo-controlled studies coming out, even if they're from Israel or Europe or somewhere else, do you think this is going to be more and more accepted by the medical community and that barriers such as the Schedule I drug listing will be changing?
It's changing very rapidly. Just about 2 months ago, I have a lady who's got severe leukemia. It was terminal leukemia, and she virtually had run out of options. And one of the doctors came up to her and said, try medical CBD. So it's slowly penetrating. In fact, my wife has a neurological condition that her own neurologist is here in San Diego, and he's studied CBD for a number of neurological conditions. As I said, it's growing very rapidly.
Let's talk a little bit about California in particular. Now, what is the status of the law for hemp growing here in California?
Today, you would need a permit from the Department of Agriculture. 6 months from now, you may not need anything. You can probably grow it in a planter on your windowsill if you want.
I assume you're talking about those ballot initiatives that would make even recreational marijuana legal in California if the voters approve that in November. Would that mean that it would just automatically legalize hemp as well?
Or that's
would that
correct.
So it wouldn't require separate legislation?
That's correct.
Interesting. Very interesting. How conducive are the soils and the climate in California to growing hemp?
If we were to distribute hemp seeds to everyone with a garden and you just toss the seeds out into the garden. Virtually everyone with a garden would see it taken over by hemp.
It kind of grows like a weed.
It is a weed, yes.
Yeah, well, it is, you know, related to marijuana, although it doesn't make you high, but I guess there's a reason why they call that weed.
Yeah, you don't need grow houses. You don't need sources of artificial light 24 hours. You don't need incredible irrigation the way you do for marijuana plants.
So it's a lower water crop than marijuana?
Yes, it is.
Oh, that's good to know here in California.
It's a lower water using crop than cotton by 30% and alfalfa by nearly a half. And it doesn't require pesticides and it's not genetically modified.
We've been talking primarily about CBD oil derived from hemp, but if it becomes legal to grow it in California, what other parts of that plant can be used? Or what other sources of income might there be for the farmers?
After you've extracted the CBD and whatever other components you want that are extractable, you're left with the fiber, which is primarily used or had been used in clothing for paper manufacture. As Leon had stated before, there were many uses. My guess is at this point, there'd be many uses that are now that utilize plastic, that utilize petroleum products that will go back to hemp-based.
That's certainly a great thing from a sustainability standpoint.
Actually, Audi, BMW, and Mercedes-Benz, among other car makers, are using the cellulose from the hemp plant to make the insulation and the dashboards and the sound insulation in cars inside the doors.
Actually, the early diesel engine I was reading ran on hemp oil. They used hemp as a derivative to produce the diesel fuel. So just imagine if we could be running all of our vehicles on hemp oil. What a boon that could be for not only the environment but the economy.
There's a lot of hemp. Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah. So how big do you think this could become if this becomes legal? What kind of an impact, looking in your crystal ball here, could this have on the California economy when you consider the impact to the growers, to the retailers, to the distributors like yourself? How big could this get?
Well, depending on how far you go with the development of things like synthetic lubricants and synthetic fuels, I think there's just no limit to what it can do. Farmers can plant this right after they harvest a crop. They can leave their fields, typically they've left them fallow, but they can put hemp in as an off-season crop.
Ah, very good. So it makes the land more productive for more of the year then.
Yes.
I also mentioned that barley, which is grown in San Diego County, is also a cousin of cannabis and grows quite well here.
I didn't know that.
If you can grow barley, you can certainly grow hemp.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, I really want to thank you for joining us today, both of you gentlemen. I'm going to give each of you the final word. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about hemp and the growing hemp industry? Jay?
Yes, I would just like to tell people out there that while we don't promote its cure or therapeutic value for any particular condition, we invite you to research on your own. There are many people who feel that the anti-pain, anti-inflammatory aspects of CBD oil, particularly as it comes from hemp, worth pursuing rather than going to things that are now becoming rapidly out of favor, such as opioids. Hemp is a natural product. People tolerate it well, and you're advised if you need help on this, there are sites on the internet like projectcbd.org that are very informative. We as well would be happy to consult with you on anything that you might be interested in.
Yeah, it's very interesting that in Colorado, where they legalized even the recreational use of marijuana, one thing nobody expected was they found a huge drop in the number of overdoses, you know, hospital-treated overdoses of both prescription opioids and street drugs like heroin. So apparently a number of people really didn't want that high. They would prefer to get marijuana, and many more would probably prefer to get CBD oil from hemp that doesn't make you high at all. It's also worth noting that if people are interested in trying CBD for medicinal purposes, that you do not have to smoke. There are different forms for it. With marijuana, I think people typically think of lighting up a joint, although you can get, you know, oils and creams. But the CBD, I understand, from hemp is also available in different forms. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it comes in edibles, which are somewhat popular. The most popular form is a tincture. It comes in little spray bottles or little bottles with eyedroppers. And some people take two or three drops a day. Some people take a full dropper. The tinctures come in various flavors. It's very tasteful. You can get it down without masking it, but other people will put it in cereal or foods. There are parents who have children who have, let's say, autism, and they have somewhat questionable taste buds, and they'll put it in orange juice or their cereal. So it's very easy to take. It also can be vaped, but vaped. You do not get a high from the vaping. You will get some relief from whatever condition you're taking it for a little quicker than if you consume it. But since you expel lots of the good stuff to the air, you don't get as much value for what you're puffing.
Very interesting. Leon, do you have any final thoughts for us today?
Yes, I'm amazed at the number of products in local stores that have CBD oil in them and cannabidiol, and generally hemp products. I was in Sprouts and counted 27 different items. They were cosmetics, food supplements, of course, hemp milk, and other topical medicines, but also Whole Foods, even Albertsons has hemp milk now. So hemp products are everywhere.
It's really gone mainstream. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we've been speaking today with Jay Gordon from Green Garden Gold, which is a hemp-based CBD product distributor, and our own Leon Thompson, who's been researching this issue. Jay, I'm going to give you the final word. If people would like to get more information or they want to know how to get in touch with you, where can they find you?
The best place to find me would be through my personal website, which I've called Twins, spelled T-W-Y-N-S, CBD.com, and my contact information is on there. A little bit of information concerning the CBD is on there, and we'll be more than happy to entertain questions or comments and give you as much information as you wish.
I want to thank both of you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Manis of the Manis Vineyards Estate.
Hello, San Diego. Welcome to Vines and Wines. It's a radio show that introduces you to many of the rising new superstars and energized people in the local wine industry that will forever change the landscape of San Diego as it emerges into a brand new EVA wine growing district.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. And today I am guest hosting the Vines and Wines segment on our show, and we are on location in Ramona's Highland Valley, the heart of wine country up here. And our very special guest today is Alfredo Gallone with the Principe de Tricase Winery. Alfredo, welcome to the show.
Hello.
So I understand that your family has a very illustrious lineage in Italy with its roots in Greece. Tell us about that.
My family moved from Greece in the 1500s to southern Italy. And because at that time southern Italy was attacked on the coastline from the African tribes, my ancestor organized protection for the coastline. And the king of Naples heard about this valor and named him as Principe di Tricase. And so the lineage started with him.
So he was recognized for his heroism by being named the prince of all the lands that he was protecting. That is amazing. Now, I also understand that your winery here specializes in a grape called Aglianico, which originated in Greece but is no longer grown there. It's grown in Italy, and now you're bringing it here to Southern California in Ramona. Tell us what is so special about the Aglianico grape and wine.
Well, we produce here three grapes, Aglianico, Aleatico, and Nebbiolo. And we're just starting with some Petit Syrah, but mostly are Italian grapes that are very old, ancient grapes. The Aglianico was used by the Romans to go around and to plant new grapes everywhere because it was very hardy. And the wine mostly was capable of traveling versus other wines that are more delicate.
I'm told that the Aleatico was the favored wine of a very famous person in history.
The Aleatico was the wine that Napoleon used to drink when he was a prisoner at the island of Elba. And if you go on Wikipedia, you'll find out more about him loving the wines and being happy to drink that kind of a specialty wine, which is available here now in Ramona and is made the same ancient way it was made then today.
Amazing. It's really one of the most unusual wines I've ever tasted. Can you tell us about that?
The Aleatico has the rose flavor and smell and is just coming out of the glass when you pour it. Without any addition whatsoever to the grape itself or to the wine, is just a natural smell, which is really, really amazing.
You also have a wine called Romantico that's a dessert wine. Can you give us some details?
Yes, the Romantico is the same Aleatico grapes dried out in the sun after harvest and then squeezed. It's a very particular wine with a strong aroma, beautiful for dessert, a little high in alcohol, but it will really give you a romantic evening.
Well, thank you for sharing that information.
We also, from the skin of the Aglianico, Aunt Bee Botanicals makes a cream that is used for botanical clay mask or for preserving, supposedly preserving from aging.
Amazing. Okay. Now, I see that a lot of your wine bottles here have medals hanging around them. Tell us about some of the awards that you've won.
In the last 2 or 3 years, after my wine, to my taste, was kind of good, I didn't know if it was just me that I liked it or if it was a good wine. So I sent for competitions all over the country, and I won like 12 medals in 2 years.
Very good, including some impressive ones, Finger Lakes International Competition in New York, to name one of them. I understand that you're only making these right now in very small batches, so how do people get these wines?
Our production is very limited, and we make around 6,000 bottles of wine every year. So we will be able to sell it through membership and through club membership only to maybe 200 or 300 people that will enroll to our club membership, and that's how we distribute our wine.
Okay, so that's through pineandwine.com.
Yes, or they can call me on the phone numbers that are listed on the web. And to you listeners, if you mention that you heard about this interview and you come to us, I'll make sure you'll be very happy and surprised with some special treatment. Thank you.
Well, that's very kind. Now, you also grow Christmas trees. Tell us a little bit about how you got into that.
Well, when I bought the property here in Ramona in 2007, it was a Christmas tree farm. And I was here when the last year the former owner was selling the last of his trees. So everybody that came begged me to keep the Christmas tree farm open. And so we have pine with the Christmas tree and wine with the grapes, and we have pineandwine.com, and we still are open to sell the Christmas tree at Christmas time.
Well, very good. And if people want to come and do tastings, I understand that it's by appointment only right now, is that correct?
Yes, we are open by appointment. You can go on our website and pineandwine.com, and my number is there. You can call me, and anytime I'm up here, I'll be happy to open up for you and show you my winery, taste my wine from barrel or from bottles.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you very much for coming.
Cheers.
This is Ed Barreno with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego's Registrar of Voters on East County Magazine on KNSJ. Poll workers, especially those who are bilingual in any one of 8 specific languages, are still needed for the June 7th presidential primary election in San Diego County. In addition, the registrar needs standby poll workers who can be assigned on short notice. Standbys who can also speak a second language are in demand too. Poll workers receive a stipend ranging from $100 to $175 depending on the assignment, and those who are bilingual receive an additional $15 if they are assigned specifically to provide language assistance to voters. The registrar's office is required by federal law to provide bilingual speakers and voting materials to voters who speak Spanish, Filipino, Vietnamese, and Chinese. A survey by the University of California, Berkeley also showed a need for speakers of Khmer, Japanese, Korean, and Hindi at about 20 precincts, so the registrar's office is also recruiting poll workers bilingual in those languages for the June 7th election. Poll workers must be registered voters in the state of California or must be permanent residents in the United States and have transportation to their assigned polling location. They will also need access to the internet to complete an online training and attend a 2-hour class. Bilingual poll workers are needed in many cities and neighborhoods, including these communities in East County: Alpine, Bostonia, Crest, El Cajon, Helix, Hamishaw, Julian, La Mesa, Lakeside, Lemon Grove, Navajo, Ramona, Rolando, Santee, and Spring Valley. Prospective poll workers can apply online at sdvote.com. For more information, call the Registrar of Voters office at 858-565-5800 or email pollworker@sdcounty.ca.gov.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. Sunflower seed products manufactured by SunOpta have been voluntarily recalled in 24 states due to possible listeria contamination, although no illnesses have been reported. The recall includes certain sunflower seed products made by Planters, Sunrich Naturals, as well as an Oriental salad from Papa John's Salad and Products that was sold in grocery stores, including Albertsons, Safeway, and Food for Less. The FDA urges consumers to throw these products away or return them to stores for refunds. Listeria is an infection that can cause high fever, abdominal pain, diarrhea, headaches, stiffness, and nausea. It is most dangerous for pregnant women, the elderly, children, and those with weakened immune systems.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.